grown one.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Dan Mason. KC up in the house. Appreciate you. Hey, look here. Today, we're going to get into an interesting topic today, and this came from bumping heads with Joe and John, and we all giving our opinions on it. And we thought, you know, let's talk about perception. Before we even get to a video, what is our individual personal perceptions, which means some of us, we're going to have to face our prejudices when we draw these perceptions. And we wanted to talk about body cameras and dash cameras. And while we're at it, let's just go in and throw in phone cameras, too. We want to talk about those, the good and the bad with them. And there, believe me, there is some bad in it. And we're going to talk about some of this bad that you guys may not know. But within policing, we know this bad to exist. So we're going to talk about that. Also, we want to talk about a topic that John brought to the forefront that was really, really interesting. John learned something yesterday talking with me and Joe that for all his expertise in dealing with the legal system and the criminal justice system, John didn't know. So we're going to let John open up that. We're going to hit that part first. We've got, of course, we got our specialist in the house, Attorney Billy Clark, because we know where to go. When we need to get the legal skinny, we know who to go to, and we have Attorney Billy Clark that's going to join us for the show today, and we're going to get right into it. But first off, we got to say good morning to everybody. I got to start out with my baby girl up top. Claire, what's going on? How's life? Tell us about your week.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I have finals this week, so I'll be contributing, obviously, based on experience. But my head has been elsewhere this entire week. So I'm excited for the show, though. I'm excited to be here, and I'm ready to get going.
All right, let's slide over. Big John, you learned a lot this week. This has been a computer week for you, brother. You've learned a lot. We want to welcome you into the full screen realm of reality, away from the one in square. And, brother, you stepped it up. And what I love, John, is when you were with me and Joe and we were fighting through all this, you know, you were not ashamed to say, help me learn this. And, brother, you stepped your game up. Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone. First of all, I needed to learn how to do this because my grandkids say, Dad, you stupid. All the time when they catch you before. You got a 6-7-year-old going through the computer, finding whatever they want to find up there, probably on some of these dating sites, whatever they want to be on. Grandpa had to realize he was stupid. I've been doing the show for a year and a half, maybe 2 years or whatever, using a phone, man. So I finally see what it feel like to be like Joe Mosley and Chief Devlin over here, man. So it's a good feeling, man, to join the rest of the team. So, yeah, it's real nice, man. And I look forward to this show because yesterday both of these topics came up as a general conversation. And for those who are listening, that's what makes Behind the Blue Curtain. An everyday conversation, just a regular, yo, how you doing, Joe? How you doing, Stan? And we're just in a conversation and subjects come up. And those subjects become topics of shows. And I think that because we are so intimate in our conversations, we go places that other shows may not go. Mm-hmm. Have not thought of until they heard it on Behind the Blue Curtain, and now it becomes a show topic somewhere else. And I'm talking about the big shows out there mm-hmm. as well. So that's the beauty of Behind the Blue Curtain. A general group conversation turns into a show topic. And I'll shut up right there.
Bro, you know what? I'm going to pat us on the back right now. I don't care about viewers, likes, clicks, shares. None of us do. It doesn't matter. But I will say this definitively. For the last 6 years of doing this show, everything that we said would happen in policing could happen in policing and should happen in policing to bear. We have seen it play out in real time, oftentimes within 2 weeks of when we said it would happen. And that's not because we sit around a Ouija board and we're soothsayers. It's because we share so much knowledge on here from such a vast pool of experts that we're able to look at where we are, where we're trending in the world today, and where are we going to end up. Not a police think tank, but all the law enforcement specialists observing human behavior from our aspect, or a bunch of psychologists and psychiatrists. Everybody's here. Everybody's represented, bro. So we appreciate you being here, man. You know, you're a valuable part of the show. You up there with the White House, the flag in the background, man. I'm going to sit down somewhere. Big Chief, what's up?
Good morning, everybody. Been a very busy, long week, but, hey, man, very fruitful, get a lot of stuff, got a lot of things happening. If you hear the rumbling in the background, that's SpaceX doing an engine test somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. So it's not an earthquake, and the world's not coming to an end. But, yeah, we got our Blue Santa going. We did our Christmas tree lighting. Apparently, I went viral for arresting the Grinch. I was apparently all over the place. You can Google that. Reuters, Newsmax, didn't realize it was going to go that far, but it did. And then we did last night, one of the big things that's near and dear to me was a fundraising event for our advocacy center here locally, which is a nonprofit that does a lot of great work for sexual misconduct, sexual assault type cases. We did the purse bingo. And so we got to model purses. I modeled a purse and walked around and had people bid on them and play bingo. And it was a good time, good event, good turnout. Don't know how much money they made, but I hope they did very well because their service is 100% absolutely needed in the work that we do. So anyway, ready for this topic, excited about this topic. Good to see Billy here. We have some legal expertise, so ready to go.
Hey, Chief, before we go there, really important, we're entering December. I want you to take a minute and talk about two very important things that I spent 25 years of my life dealing with, and they need to be talked about, Toys for Tots and Blue Santa. Tell the community, because we hear about the negative things, and quite frankly, oftentimes we do talk about the negative things police officers do on this show. And it's not to convict them. It's to say, okay, this was wrong, but how do we fix it? But I want to take a minute right now and say, Blue Santa and Toys for Tots, that police departments across this country do every year. Would you please, much time
yeah.
as you need, bro.
Yeah, so two major areas. And, of course, coming out of the pandemic, you know, there are people that are hurting big time. This go around. And, so the Toys for Tots program is basically us supporting the Marine Corps Reserve, where we take new unwrapped toys, and basically we collect them, we get them to the Marine Corps, and they disseminate them through their Toys for Tots program. We have done that for probably 12 years now, have a really good collection that we turn in, usually mid part of December, but it helps out quite a bit. And since we do it every year, that means they run out of toys. So the need is there. So you have the opportunity to drop off a toy. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything extravagant. Something from the dollar store is perfectly fine because that will make a difference in a child's life, just to have something on Christmas morning. The Blue Santa program, and we are not the only agency that does that. It's a pretty wide national event, but we collect money and or toys for families in need. Our program, there's an application on our website. Where you can fill it out for a family that may be in need, where we can provide some assistance. And this year, we're not only just doing toys per se, but we're also going to do help with food and things of that nature to try to bring a little bit of cheer and holiday to families. And we have families that are identified. Agencies have families that they identify that they already know, so they earmark some of that money. But, when you get corporate sponsorships, and I'm not going to say their name because Facebook will kick us off, but they start with a W and end with a Mart. But they provided quite a bit of corporate sponsorship for us this year, which I was really happy to see through a grant program. So we're going to be able to do a lot of stuff this year to help out families in need in our area, in our community. because they're certainly out there. We see them every day. Mm-hmm. And again, what Stan was alluding to, we do talk about, and we talk about, discuss some of the things that are wrong in policing. And we try to figure out what's the best course of action to fix those problems. But these are some of the unseen things that happen. And we're not, like I said, we're not the only agency locally that's doing this. I know multiple agencies that are doing this. They're busting their tails to try to bring a little bit of joy to people in the community, because we know we run into them. We deal with the folks every day that are really down their luck and having a hard time. And we try to give back as much as we can. So we're not all evil. We're not all bad. We're not all on the media doing bad things. There's a lot of us that are out there that are really trying to help. And, gentlemen, Claire, included those of us that have been law enforcement, John, even in your world experience, we have given quite a bit to make people's lives a lot better. So, that's very important if we want to start talking about this topic of community policing that we always discuss. Mm-hmm. We want to start there. That's one of the main tenets of giving back to the community. But thanks for giving me a few seconds to talk about that.
No, you're not off the hook yet, Chief. Where do people in the Hewitt area, where's the website they can go?
They go to www.cityofhewitt.com, go to the police tab, follow the link down. You'll see the link there for Blue Santa. You can get on there. There's the application. You can then email. You can either fill it out or then email one. To Lindsay Bartlett, lbartlett@cityofhewitt.com. The email address for her is on there. She's kind of an all-hands-on-deck kind of person that keeps me in line and gets me where I need to be and tells me what I need to do. So, you can get that to her. We've got, several applications now that we're reviewing and going through. But we still got more. We still got more. So, you even think a family in need for this holiday season, fill one out. We'll make it happen. We'll do everything we can in our power to get somebody to make the holiday season just a little bit brighter. So you go to cityhewitt.com, check it out, fill it out, send it in. We'll make it happen.
You're off the hook now, Chief. Thank you. And if you're in the area, please take advantage of that. And I'm going to give a shout out. Despite everything, I'm going to say one of the things that I know my former department, Waco PD, is very, very big on Blue Santa and giving the children. And we had this huge room, like a corporate conference room. And it was filled from the floor to the ceiling with every kind of toy you can imagine. And we would come into roll call, and there were big boxes of trash bags up there. And the sergeants would say, get a bag, fill it up with toys, put it in your car. You all know these families that need. And so we would actually have these toys in our cars a lot of times. If you know a family, and please check with Waco BD. I'm not speaking for them. I can only go by my past experience there. And I have no reason to believe that they don't continue on this program. And I don't talk about Waco PD much on this show, but I will tell you that one of the things I am proud of is their Blue Santa program for Central Texas is humongous. You will never walk into a place and see that many toys just piled up, sealing the floor, where officers, literally, you walk through every toy you can imagine, and you can get as many as you want, what you want. There's no take three toys to this kid. You can drop a whole bag of toys a family with one kid. So if you're in the Waco area, call the Waco Police Department and inquire about their Blue Santa program. See if it's still going on. Reach out to them. I'm not advocating, but I don't know if they're still doing it. I can only assume they are. They did it for 25 years I was there. And despite my opinions of them in certain areas, that is one thing they have always done, is given to the community during Thanksgiving and Christmas. So if you're in the Waco area, you got two resources right here that you can go to when your ends aren't meeting and you don't want to be able to say, I couldn't provide for my children. It's not necessary. They're not going to tell you got to be on Facebook and you got to get, you can meet them and they'll just give you the toys. You do it. You be mom and dad. That's what we're there for. And I got to go down now to our expert in the house before I get to the chief. the commander-in-chief, I'm sorry, that's sitting up in the Oval Office. But I got to go down to Billy Clark. Billy, come on, tell us what's going on with the campaign. How you feeling, brother? Good morning. Appreciate you being here.
Good morning. Good morning. How's everybody doing today?
Good, bro.
I'm here. I remember this time last year. It was on my birthday. My birthday is tomorrow, December 5th. And I know last year I was on the show on my birthday. So it's just good to come full 360 and be right back here on December the 4th, which is the day before my birthday. So I just wanted to say this show is that important to me that I'm spending my birthday weekend on this show to make sure that everyone is getting this information. So kudos to you, Stan, and the rest of the team for making this happen. Another shout out, my fraternity's Founders Day is today. December 4th, 1906 is when Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated was established, was as the first African-American predominantly fraternity in America. So this is a special day, Stan. As far as the campaign, I'm still out actively campaigning. Our campaign is looking really good. Like I said earlier, we did get a major endorsement from the National Black Police Association endorsing the campaign. So the folks in Dallas and that national organization is interested in seeing what we can do to do what Chief was saying there, is just meal that community policing and getting our community and our police on the same board. Because at the end of the day, we all start off as civilians. And then we either enter police service or the military or some kind of government agency. And then when we're done with that, guess what we go back to? We return to be a citizen. So it's very important that we take a vested interest in ensuring that those engagements with our police and even with our military and our elected officials is one that we would feel safe, knowing that it's good things are happening when we're older, when we get up there in age and we're able to sit back and say, hey, we made this happen. So that's a blessing to be in a position to make sure that happens. The campaign, again, I am running for Dallas County Judge. Right now, I believe there's two of us in the campaign are running for it, for this primary seat for the Democrat primary. I am running against an incumbent, but that's pretty much where we are. You know, we have a few similarities, but for the most part, we have a lot of differences. And what I'm looking for is more proactive mindset to everything. I hate to sit back and wait for things to happen to me. If I can lean forward and attempt to I wouldn't say what I think to death, but to at least find a path that's going to be successful for me and for the campaign as far as basic things like policing, leaning forward to ensure that our criminal justice system is fair and equitable for all, what my role as a county judge would be in doing that. And I can tell you, as a criminal defense attorney and a civil rights attorney, it's a little bit different. It's a different feeling when you're dealing with people who are facing life in prison or have been killed by an injustice versus, you know, just doing personal injury cases all day. You know, I do those. I'm not saying that that's a bad area of law, but that's not all that I do. I deal with people. I do have my office in Waco. I have an office here in Dallas, and as well as I just opened a satellite office in Houston, Texas.
All right.
So we're up and moving. I travel a little bit, trying to just get a feel for what different communities are doing as far as their policing. I was in Chicago recently, and I was just kind of getting an assessment on how they're handling different things in their community. And I was there for, they had this parade downtown while I was there. And then right after that, I saw in the news where some other town had someone run through some barricades and kill some individuals at a parade. And I'm thinking, wow, what could have been done different in that town? When I was in Chicago, I saw these dump trucks. They were blocking off intersections. I think they were dump snow plow trucks blocking off. So you couldn't get onto the street where we had this parade. I'm like, wow, What if other communities have that same kind of mindset as far as being proactive on what could happen? And I think, you know, I got to give a shout out to Chicago. There was nobody getting there. If you weren't afloat, you weren't getting onto that road for this parade. So those are kind of things that my campaign is focused on and ensuring that we continue to thrive. And if you are interested in the campaign, remember, anyone can donate to the campaign. There's no limitations as long as you're it's not a criminal activity or you are a U.S. citizen. You can donate to the campaign.
Billy, where can we donate?
DallasCounty.com, and you click the donate tab, and you'll see a big picture of me, and you can rest assured every dime is going to go toward ensuring that we get our word out about this campaign.
Give the website one more time. I think I interrupted you.
It's www.clarkfordallascounty.com. And at the top right of that screen, you'll see a donate tab. You can donate. You know, anything helps. $1, $5, $50. Obviously, the more the better can help towards going to this campaign.
Okay. I'm going to donate to you, Billy. And after you see my donation, I know you're going to call me. But I'm going to be, and I'm going to tell you why. It has nothing to do with that Billy is black. That ain't got nothing to do with it. Billy, you said something when you were talking about foresight and vision. Policing operates 65% on foresight and vision. We go to what is. What is. But our scenarios are always what could be, what could happen. What do we see in countless videos? Well, you, I don't know, your phone might be a gun. We perceive things, good or bad. We perceive things. So just the fact that you're a candidate that's willing to acknowledge that you see beyond the pale, brother, I'm on board with you. I'm going to get off of that. But when we get into the first topic, I'm going to bring John up to bring that one out, and then I want you right on the back end of it because you and I just talked a little while ago, and you have a lot to bring. But I got to drop down to the Commander-in-Chief in the White House, Big Joe.
What it is. But it is. I can't follow. Again, you got to keep putting me behind these great thinkers. I'm not that bright. I, too, will be donating to the Billy Clark Consortium. But more importantly, I think when we talk, when we go into these topics today, the real issue for us going forward is finding those people with visions that look beyond the pale. The storm is coming. Storm is here.
Mm-hmm.
So now the question becomes, how do we, either we embrace the storm or do we ride the storm? Okay, just what do we do? But again, kudos to Billy and to everybody on the stage. The fact is that we do have a voice and that someone is at least admitting, you know, it's kind of like the emperor with the emperor's clothes, you know. Nobody's telling the emperor he's naked except one person. Well, guess what? Policing is somewhat naked in this country. Nobody's telling them, and it seems like we're the only ones talking about it. But that being said, I'm ready to go. Let's get into it.
All right, Big John, I'm coming up to you first to open up that conversation and, you know, take about 20 seconds, 30 seconds for those who may be hearing from you for the first time on your legal knowledge. And then I want you to just go into the discussion. And I want you and Billy to have this discussion on what you learned yesterday, that throughout everything that you went through, you did not.
Yes. For those who are listening for the first time, I did 24 and a half years in prison. And prior to that, I did a couple of what we would call skid bids. I did a 2-year sentence and a 3-year sentence. We call that the layaway plan, where, you know, you're doing time. You're actually doing 50, 60 years, but you start off with 2 and another 3 and another 5. The next thing you know, you done paid off 40, 50 years. But I ended up having a 40-year sentence, and unbeknownst to me was the Miranda. And I was talking to Joe and Stan about officers reading the rights when making an arrest. And it was said to me that the officer don't have to read you your rights. And I was shocked. And the thing about us is that, you know, Joe say something, Stan say something. I just don't accept it because they say it. And I know that they're cops and they have experience. And I think about my own experiences and I was like, well, I know of cases, I know of this, and we have dialogue. Because the beauty of our conversations is when we talk about policing, we don't want to know just what works. We want to know why it works and how it works. So when we have our discussions, it's a little deeper than just Stan and them giving me information and Joe giving me information. So Attorney Clark, I was told that as long as the officer who was driving, say like who's making the arrest, was not questioning you, that he didn't have to read you your rights at that time. So you have all the legal experience and know. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Because there's so many, I mean, and before you go, I just want to say this, right? I was considered one of the top notch jailhouse attorneys. That's what we call ourselves, jailhouse lawyers. They used to call me Legal Beagle number two. So, truth be told, I helped a lot of guys get out of jail. And there's still aspects of the law that with all my legal books, my Black Law Dictionary, which is the Bible of the courtroom, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand. And there's so many guys that are in prison. Oh, yeah, I'm going to beat this kid today because they didn't leave me my rights. So I got them. I know I got them up. And then they come back to the jail and be like, yo, I thought you'd go home today. Man, the judge wants some fun. But this comes from us not knowing the law. Billy Clark, please drop it like it's hot.
John, you're bringing up some very, very good points that a lot of people don't quite understand about rights and what's to require and what's called a custodial interrogation, and that's the key. So I first start with what Stan, the information Stan gave you was spot on. The police do not have to always read you your rights. And in fact, I mean, if you're just going to start talking and telling them stuff without them asking you a question, they certainly are free to receive that information. And in fact, a lot of agencies, without going into the details of some of the things they have, but they can collect information from you just from you talking. So that's one of the things the criminal defense attorney often tells clients is just to STFU, just stop, don't talk, because not talking can never hurt you, never. If you don't say a word, it can never hurt you. But as soon as you start opening your mouth, anything, hey, how you doing today, John? I'm good. Okay, that's a statement. That statement's going to come back to haunt you. You say you were doing good. So now this crime that you are alleged to have committed, well, you're in your right state of mind because you said out of your mouth that you're good. You're feeling good. So Miranda versus Arizona was a case that involved a guy that was basically charged with some things or alleged to have done these crimes, and he was not given his rights of what he was entitled to under the Constitution, his Fifth Amendment's right. Now, what's custodial interrogation? That's the key. That's the key to all of this. If you reasonably believe that you are not free to go, and then you are asked certain questions about the crime or about anything that's going on with that investigation, that is a custodial interrogation that would require you to have your rights read before you start speaking. I don't know if you watch First 48. I hate to go to a First 48 bit, but every time you see a person in there, before they start talking, they say, hey, before we go, let me just read you these rights, because I'm getting ready to start asking you about some things that can end up in your demise, or just to be part of the investigation period. Those things are required. If they don't read you your rights, anything that you say during that time could be suppressed, and it can ultimately lead to you not even being having enough evidence to be put on trial. So that's why it's very important. Most police officers understand that. They know that they're detaining you and you're not free to go, and then they start asking you about questions and they don't reach your rights, then those things could end up being suppressed. So they're going to reach your rights if they know that you're in custody. And being in custody doesn't mean you have to have handcuffs on. It just means you reasonably believe you are not free to go. If they box you in or they say, hey, sit here, and if you ask them, can I go, and they say, no, you can't go, and then they're questioning you, they should read you your rights before that. But most of the time, if you volunteer, you consent to speaking to the police, then they can ask you whatever you want. I mean, if you start just speaking and they're not asking you questions, then they can do that under the law. So it is designed to protect you from incriminating yourself, because people do incriminate themselves. So that's what it's all about. So I hope I kind of gave you a big overview of kind of where we are and what police can and can't do. And if I missed something, I see Joe's getting ready to springboard into something, and I see the chief ready. So whatever y'all can add to what I said, please do.
Hey, Billy, before they go, let me ask you to explain this term. Big Latin term that's going to sound like either something you don't want to eat or something on the menu you can't read. Res justi statement. And I know Joe was going to go there, and I know the chief was there. We get them all the time. Can you please explain, because we want to enlighten the people. And this is a term that will come up in court, and they won't know what the hell the judge or the attorneys are talking about. What is the res justi statement?
It's a statement that's, that you just say, I can't even come up with an example right now, but if you just say a statement about something that's not even, it could be alluding to an event, maybe an aspect of the investigation or a statement against yourself that you just say in the open without anyone asking you a particular question, then those are statements that can be used against you. So,
spontaneous utterance.
Yeah, like that. There's a whole list of things that statements can be used. There's like excited utterance. You can even say things and if you know that you're likely to die and you do a statement, and those statements are statements also that can be used. So it's just one of those. There's a whole list of different statements that can be made against you without you even knowing that they're going to be used in a court of law. So knowing how to discern which ones those are, it takes an attorney to figure out what the intent of your statement is, what you said under the circumstances. And everything, and I'm sure you heard this, John, everything is based on the totality of the circumstances as it existed at this time. What a reasonable person would believe under what's going on at this particular moment in time. It's like a snapshot. You take a picture, what's happening right here, right now. And you can take that same picture somewhere else. It may look the same, but the facts are completely different. So we don't want to get tied into, well, this happened here, but in this case, it happened this way, and person A got off, person B got life in prison. Because there's a whole lot going on inside of that picture.
Billy, I want to throw this at you as an attorney, right? And it's difficult because I hear, if people that pay attention to the show, they hear Stan talk about how he was part of the community, how the community trusted him, they talked to him. And here's where one of the major dangers lie. And not saying that Stan was ever this type of cop, but there's cops out there that would like to be heroes, and they inject themselves inside of the investigation, and it's not just the arrest. So Stan may say, man, come on, John, man, I know you forever, man. I mean, I know you throw your hands, but come on, John, you picked up a gun, and you know, people get comfortable with certain cops, right, and they make statements. And it's just a general conversation that the dude thinks he's having, like, I'm not incriminating myself, but I could have just said something like, well, Stan, it wasn't even me, man, because I was at my girl crib. So now I just gave Stan where I was supposed to have been. So now when the detectives come, and if I choose to conversate with them, oh, I wasn't there. I was with my mother at the mall. But I just gave a conflicting statement because in the car, I told Stan I was where? At my girl's crib. And this is like one of the dangers that the general public don't understand.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, and for the most part, police that deal with people on a level of community policing, they're going to establish relationships with the folks in the community. That's just, I mean, we're all, at the end of the day, we're humans. I know Stan and Waco live right in the hood. He lived right amongst everyone. So he's going to establish those bonds with people. But at the same time, at the end of the day, officers have a duty to what their job is, what they're entitled to do, what they raise their hand to do. So if they're asking you certain things, and just in my opinion, this is all my opinion, just to save them from getting in a situation like that, just don't say anything. Just, you know, it's always easier to that, to prevent these exact type of things. Because if you tell them something, you know, it, like they say, it can and will be used against you because they have a duty. Now, how are they going to use the information you gave them? That information has to go somewhere, right? So now you gave them a conflicting information. So whether they want to, you know, turn you in or not, they still going to say, well, John told me this on this day. Now, the prosecutor and the defense attorney is going to get that statement and punch holes in it and whatever. And next thing you know, it's a whole lot of stuff that just should not have happened.
And Billy, but you hit on...
Wait, answer that. Just be quiet.
But you're hitting on something that I want to send in this conversation that we're having to the officers out there. That I think that too many officers, I don't care what color, I'm just talking officers, but when that community invites you in, whether it's the white community, the black, it doesn't matter. When they invite you in and they choose to trust you, they don't trust the police department, and they don't trust police. They're trusting you. And when they give you information, what is it that you do with it? Are you on the police department side, or are you on the community side? And that is what I think a lot of officers can't balance today. You're on the side of that which is right and legal and morally and ethically correct. To hell with what the department and the chief thinks or the hood thinks. Now, there's a young man, I'm not going to give out any names, walking around Waco today with his children, who up until I left, every time he saw me, anybody standing around him, he would say, this man believed in me. They wanted to put me in jail for life for a murder. But he said, no, this kid lived two houses up from me. One for a murder. I'm on vacation. SWAT team, everybody else had been to his house. Mama said, he ain't here. When I showed up, me, just by myself. Well, he could have done this to you. Well, hell, I live two houses down. He could have done it when I'm sitting on the porch drinking a beer. And I said, go ahead and get him. Bring him outside. Let's get him to the jail where he's safe. Ain't no SWAT team coming. Ain't nobody here but me. Let's just get him over there and get him safe. This lady went in the house and got her son. Brought him out. The handcuffs go on and he slammed against the car. No, we sat out on the front porch. And I asked him, what the hell happened? He told me what he believed happened. Did I read him his rights? No, I didn't read him his rights. It was a spontaneous thing out of my mouth. What happened? But from what he told me, I was able to go out and find who's responsible, who did what. This kid is free today. A couple months later, message was, stay out of our cases.
So my philosophy was, as long as we put somebody in jail for the murder, it doesn't matter if they deserve to be there, as long as we clear the case. See, that's the disconnect. When we talk about police-community relations, we talk about trust and transparency, absolution, when we talk about all these things, and Stan is not unique. Joe has these stories. The chief has these stories to where we've caught hell within our department, divisional or sectional animosity, because we chose to tell somebody else with a title, this part here isn't right. Well, you don't know. You're just a patrol officer. I am. But guess what? I'm out there every day dealing with what is right. Chief, talk to me. What you thinking?
I was going to say, I had a lot of those conversations coming up. But, you know, in John's scenario there, the guy that's, I think wants to be the superstar, wants to use their leverage, you know, within the community because they know these people, hey, we grew up together, blah, 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 you know, some kind of movie script type thing. You know, if the intent there is not true to form, I mean, you've got to understand the officers have sworn an oath to uphold the law. I mean, everybody needs to understand that, whether, you know, it's your family, whoever it is. You need to be willing to be prepared to be held accountable for what you say. That's the first thing. But the intent of the officer is there, not in, I don't know, of course, Texas, we don't necessarily have any good faith. But if it's not in good faith, then, you know, it creates an issue for a defense attorney to bring that up, right? And you may have the stellar information. You may have the key to the case. But if you didn't do it the right way, somebody like Billy Clark's going to squash you, and it's done, and they're gone. Right. So the case is over and it's done with. So what you're talking about, John, is true. And that's a lot of the way a lot of this work gets done. Have I had conversations with people who are, you know, breaking the law, you know, felony lawbreakers to find out who killed somebody? Yeah. And I'm not talking about these people held accountable for murder. They may be drug dealers. They may be felons in possession of firearms and stuff like that. But I'm trying to find that murder suspect. That's who I'm going after. So do we have these conversations with people that can give us information and you don't burn those bridges? Yeah, we do. That's the way a lot of this stuff is done. I mean, if you've done this business for any amount of time, that's the way we get some of that key information. Now, is it perfect? No, it's not. Now, some of the folks that were, I would consider it, you know, significant criminals in my career, has their time come up sometimes? Yeah, it has. Right. But I've always been upfront with them and told them, hey, look, you know, I'm not going to burn you on this, but you know, you keep playing this game, eventually we're going to run across one another again. And you're going to have to be held accountable for the stuff you do as well. And that's the way a lot of this stuff gets done. But again, there's a method to doing that. There is a way to get that done. It doesn't violate the legal process and then open the door for a defense attorney to kick the case right out the door. I mean, Joe, am I wrong there? I mean, do we, that's kind of a requirement in some of the things that we do.
Well, the reality is that there are certain rules that we have to abide by. We're mandated reporters between what that information, and again, it goes from the building was talking about, how does that information become developed? And again, it's relative to everybody, what we're all talking about here. How did you come to point B? You have to be able to create the nexus legally to be able to say, this is how I got the information. One of the things that we talked about with John the other day was, you know, what we call fruit of the poisonous tree. If you come across this information and in the totality of the circumstance, you came across it wrong, guess what that's out?
That's gone.
That's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about when are warnings supposed to be given, but let me give you two when they don't have to be given. If a person comes into a station, admit, oh, I just killed this guy. I don't have to give you one because that's the spontaneous utterance.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic stops. Don't have to give them. But the public is so enamored with TV.
Yeah.
The TV lawyers are what get people fucked up. Pardon my language.
There we go.
There's my dollar for today. But a lot of people, I'm serious. They look, they watch TV, they see certain shows, and they're like, wait a minute. You know, Chips. Those are real policemen. No, they're not. They're actors. However, your mouth can get you in the trouble, but how it gets you in the totality of it is what we really have to address with going forward. And again, I will say this, that when we look at Miranda versus Arizona, Escobedo versus Illinois. These are all results of police actions. Everything we have going forward is going to be based on police action. Now, again, I go back to this very base point. You have to do it correctly. That's the difference between us and them. We have to do it right the first time. And while it's quite enormous, I agree with you. I'm sorry, I do. You give a defense attorney a position by not doing your job the right way. How did you get that information? You have to, and a proponent of it, one of the things I've heard people say, you know, and it has happened. Somebody say, oh, I didn't mean to shoot that motherfucker. Guess what? You just told me. That's a spontaneous uttering. And I guarantee you, everybody on here knows that's happened. But then they go to court and say, well, you didn't read me my Miranda. You told me. I didn't say anything.
Joe, it's too much TV. And I really want to inject Claire in here right now. Reason why with her experience and being so young, because what I think that policing hasn't quite understood yet, and what I think the community has not understood yet, is that you do have a silent, very low-key demographic of street officers. Not necessarily detectives, but street officers who walk this line every day of good and bad. And America likes to say, these people are bad, these people are good, and we read every day about the so-called good people who did big white-collar corporate shit, okay, and got away with it, but we're seeing Pookie and Ray Ray go to jail when I talk to Pookie and Ray Ray every day. So do we develop a bond with these people out on the street? We absolutely do. Why? Because, number one, they're scared of me shooting them, and I'm scared of them shooting me. So we when it's convenient for them, they will share information. But when you transcend from just an officer that's there, because they're going to feed you bullshit and watch you run all day long. But how you know that community trusts you, when they come up and tell you something, they have no reason to tell you. They're not under any investigation. You're not breathing down their neck. But from interacting with you, and if your morals are in check and you're policing that community the right way, they're going to give you something. It's their way of giving penance or cleansing their soul. And I don't think enough officers, or it's not stressed enough in the academy, of understanding. Well, I wish we could just take the word, because community, that word to me says everything is perfect, everything's well, everybody has 2.5 kids and a white picket fence. That's semantical bullshit. That's not the truth of it. Because a lot of us go out in the communities where there's no wood in the neighborhood to build a fence. There aren't even street lights. You're dealing with what is, but when that community bonds with you, officers, it ain't because you got a badge and a gun. The community, hello, America. I want everybody in America to hear what I'm about to say. Blue Lives Matter, pro-police, anti. The community ain't afraid of the police. Get that part right. They ain't scared of you. Your badge impresses nobody. It really doesn't. Your uniform is not impressing those people because they're looking at guys that are doing devastation in the neighborhood that are wearing a pair of sneakers where one of them cost more than everything you're bringing out to the scene. That's real talk. So when you get in there with that community and you build that bond, I'm not going to check that gay club, man. Somebody might see me coming out and think I'm gay. We had one in Waco. I walked in all the time and checked. Why? Because those people pay taxes just like the country western club or the hip-hop club. They deserve for somebody to come in and do a bar check. Claire? Floor is open. Come on in. Give us old folks how the young folks are seeing this.
Well, you touched on a lot of points there. Specifically, one that I wanted to mention, Stan, was, your definition of community. And that brought me back to community policing and kind of how Blue Santa works. How Chief Devlin was saying is how any family can come forward and say that they might need help providing this year. And so that includes community and going out, being a street officer means integrating all of the community and bringing everybody together. So, yeah, walking that fine line every day can be difficult, but as far as gathering information goes and all that extra stuff, dude, when you go out every day and put on that badge to be a police officer, you're choosing to serve your community, not go out and put as many people in jail as possible. And I think that's what is missing in the academies is that willingness to serve a community and not keep up the systematic statistics of arrests. And I think that's probably the biggest thing what you touched on is that I wanted to mention is the that loss that's in the academies today is that's not being taught is to go out and integrate the community and make them better rather than teaching just to make arrests. This is what you mm-hmm. need to say, don't need to say, mm-hmm. And watch your own back. So,
you know, Claire, I'm kind of prejudiced because you're my little baby girl and I love you here. And it's your insight is so important. To have a young former officer come here and deliver from their personal and professional experience, it's invaluable. And I got another guy that called in here. God is good, because I'll tell you, nothing great about Stan, but we keep the mic open here. We got Billy Clark here, one of my absolute, this is my little brother. I'm older than he is. And I got another one of my little brothers that's on the Facebook Live in Waco, very, very outspoken against what is wrong, and an attorney. And we met years, and he's been on this show, we met years ago when he was a assistant district attorney. And he and I would have these witness conferences. Billy, you know witness conferences are. Claire, Joe, you know. And we would sit in there. And what amazed me with him is he never asked me for things to convict. He would generally ask me everything. And he would say, well, how do you know this? Why do you know this? And so he started to learn my sources, and there were people on the street that I would say to him, he's an assistant district attorney. And I would say, go down there and ask for this guy, Robert Callahan. Go ask for him. Well, Mason, I don't know. That's my friend. In the hood, your word is bond. It is your law. If you give somebody your word, in the hood where people have nothing but their word, it's everything. And with that, I'm going to say good morning, Robert Callahan. Brother, appreciate you joining us.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We got you.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show this morning. Good morning, everyone. I appreciate the high praise. After I left the district attorney's office in 2011, I went out in private practice as a defense attorney, which I'm still doing now. And one of the things that amazed me talking about community was how many people started calling me without me even advertising or anything else, just saying, hey, we heard that you went out as a defense attorney and we want to support you. And so that, you know, I never knew what the driving force was behind that sort of thing, like, you know, how these people knew, because I wasn't as present in the community when I was in the DA's office. But the community knew about me, and it really does show this. It's a two-way street, that trust that you build. And on that topic, you know, Chief Devlin's on the line this morning. And as we're all aware, we're coming up on Christmas, and the community and their perception of law enforcement is so important. And every year I have a client that gets harassed by the police department. It's Mr. the Grinch. Mr. the Grinch has done nothing wrong, but as we're all aware, this last week, Hewitt Police Department publicly humiliated and berated and arrested my client, Mr. Grinch, at a Christmas celebration in front of a Christmas tree, friends, family, all that, coworkers. did give him an opportunity to turn himself in, and this happens every year. And I just want to ask Chief Devlin, when does the madness stop?
Well, I guess it'll stop when they stop putting warrants out for him. You know, Judge Williams put that warrant out for him, and let me, we got to execute the warrant. He wasn't turning himself in, kind of like these knuckleheads up in Ohio or wherever they're at with the shooting. But that's a bad segue. But if the Grinch can turn himself around, we'll give him an opportunity to live his life free from harassment from our department from year to year.
Well, we already know that his heart grew 3 sizes last year. I just don't understand why we keep coming back to the same.
Custody, so he's good.
Yeah, he's on a $250,000 bond right now, and don't think that we don't realize that hoo hash was planted on him.
Hoo hash.
We look forward to litigating the issues in court, my friend.
Yeah.
We'll see you there, Mr. Callahan.
Chief, I don't know if you've seen on my Facebook post a couple weeks ago, I actually have a photo of him.
Yeah, I did see it.
So, yeah, he's be on the lookout.
You're not representing him too, are you? You're not representing him as well, are you?
Well, I was until Mr. Callahan took over, so I'm going to
So now it's going to be court with both of y'all. You're going to tag team us. Is that how that's going to work?
Hey, let's do this. Robert, I'm gonna leave your mic open, Robert, and you're on the panel unofficially, so you have to go. You're here because I want you following this show, because you and I go back, God, too many years that I want to remember. And like I said earlier, and I don't say this about everybody, and I don't say it to boost the McLennan County DA's office. You would always ask me the one question in our witness interviews, and I don't know if you remember it, when we're trying to put somebody in jail, and you would ask me something, and I would say, well, no, I don't believe that. And it may be something another officer said or said that they saw. And you did something a lot of assistant DAs don't dare do. You asked me why. And I could say something like, I've known this kid since he was in fourth grade. I know what he or she will or will not do. I've been to their house. Yes, they sell weed. They don't sell crack. They do this, they do that. And one of the things that I loved is you would take my, it's not in a book anywhere you can open, for Assistant DA 101. There's nothing that you could point to in a courtroom other than officer credibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I know some cases where I said, I don't know. I can't walk up on that stand and say that this person did this because their attorney's going to ask me this. And I have to be honest
mm-hmm.
up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I like
yeah.
is you would face dispositions back and say, we're not going to prosecute this. How important is officer
yeah.
credibility in the community?
It really is everything. I mean, I'll talk to you, you know, first of all, as when I was in the DA's office, I knew that if I had a case that had Stan on it, and if he was the primary officer and he's the one that made the probable cause arrest decision, I knew that that case was solid. And there's, you know, still have to do my due diligence. I still have to dot my I's. I still have to cross my T's. But if he, you know, I'll never forget there was a case one time where it involved a gentleman buying and selling in East Waco, and he didn't belong in East Waco. And the whole, you know, the whole video of the conversation between the officers was, you know, Stan just laying out his probable cause. And saying, like, you know, I know this area. I know this neighborhood. This guy doesn't belong here, you know. And so as a prosecutor, I knew if I had a stand case and he's the one that was in charge on the scene, that case was solid. On the other hand, I, as a defense attorney, I think probably the last case that I had Stan on before he left Waco, it was a case that the prosecutors thought oh, this is a slam dunk. And they had Mr. Mason on the stand giving a tour of the city. And I kid you not, I mean, there was a big map on the projection screen, and he was showing them, you know, the ins and outs of the different streets and nuances of the environment, and talking to them about everything that he saw. But I was listening while he was under direct examination. And what I never heard Stan say or even allude to was, yeah, I know he did it. The situation was such that, you know, he had a lot of facts. He had a lot of information about, you know, this was found in the car at this place and this was there, but he never stretched himself in order to try to help the prosecutor make their case. So I knew what was happening up there was that they were asking him the questions that they wanted to be heard by the jury and nothing more. So then when I got him on cross-examination, I asked those questions that you're not supposed to ask on cross-examination, those tell me why questions, those open-ended questions, those more nuanced questions that dig deep into beyond the narrative of the prosecution's direct examination. And he just frankly and honestly said, yeah, I don't know where this came from, or I don't know how that got there. No, I didn't know that actually belonged to him. So what ended up happening is that through the testimony and him just being honest, the jury realized late with other testimony that my client that had been accused of burglarizing his own home was actually entering lawfully into his own home with a key that he had to his own home in order to retrieve electronics that belonged to him. And so the jury found him not guilty. So the credibility is everything. And for that matter, I'll say this too. I know that judges, when they're signing search warrants, the credibility of the officers, that's going to be important to them too.
Amen. Amen, brother.
Let me.
All right, I gotta go.
There's no question.
All right, Robert, we appreciate you, brother. Thanks for popping in.
Thank
you. Officer credibility is always going to be key in anything at this point. But something you said, Stan, and I kind of stuck with me. I got to say this: it isn't just in the hood where your word matters. Your word matters, particularly for me, in everything I do. I just left another position, because I gave my word to a couple of friends that if they left, I would leave. And I did. Now, did I cut my nose despite my throat, despite my face? Who knows? But the fact of the matter is I gave my word on something. I went, and that's the way I was raised. And that's the way I think everybody on this page has some nexus. We all have that thing in our background where your word is your bond. I mean, that's just something, you know, when we talk about ethics, that's the core of ethics. Your word is your bond. Everyone, whether you be a gangbanger, a teacher or a priest, whatever, your word is your bond. And that's a core. That's a core value. And unfortunately, we've gotten away from that. I mean, there are certain societies right now, they don't even execute contracts as we know them. They're a handshake society.
Mm-hmm.
Where else does that happen? Again, I digress.
You know, Joey, at 1 hour, and this is what I love about the show. We're going to tell you all what we're going to come on and talk about. We're going to go where the Facebook is going. We're going to go where the conversation is going and where the callers are going. We're unscripted. None of us here are professionals, and we just bring it. You know, but I want to segue over into the other part of the topic today. Police dash cams, police body cams, and for that part, civilian video footage. Perception and reality. When we look at a video of what is going on, how many of us are looking at the video and listening to the video? Or are we just looking at the video? When you're looking at it, what are you missing that you didn't hear? Or vice versa. How many of us, and I know I have, and people are traumatized when they see things, and this is the cop side of me that's going, why is everybody screaming, somebody just shot? Because we deal with that enough. But sometimes the audience the cussing, the screaming is so damn loud, you can't hear what the officer is saying, which defeats the purpose of videoing. Then we move into, when I said on the post, there's a bad part of police video webcams, and people were wondering, well, what is the bad part he's talking about? I'll tell you what the bad part is talking about, and I'll let the chief come on and respond, and if I'm out of line, he can tell me. But when the body cameras came in and everybody's going to body cameras, everybody was excited about it. We're going to automatically have this transparency. Officers are apprehensive when you say you're going to put in body cams or dash cams. And it's not always because of the public. It's not always because I'll get caught doing this by the public. Some of it is internal police administrations. There are some administrators in this country, and when I say administrators, I'm going to talk from sergeants all the way to the top, who don't like a particular officer. We're going to review every single body camera thing they have, and the slightest thing they have that we disagree with, we're going to write them up on it. Might not be a day off, but they build a file on you. And so that's when the initial body cam thing came out. That's what made officers really, I think, you know, standoffish about it. Not because they didn't want them for the community, because believe me, the good ones wanted the protection. But sometimes being a good officer in the public does not make you a good officer in the department. Chief?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, what you said is definitely a consideration, being concerned. And you know, I'll tell you, law enforcement, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit when we talk about training. Officers are not concerned with, you know, they're more concerned with policy violations than anything else. That's because the organizational culture of law enforcement has become punitive for minor infractions and or violations. So if you talk to officers, when we start talking about making decisions, that's why they cannot make decisions, because they're worried about violating some policy, because policies in a lot of organizations are, you know, very specific. And some of them have to be. Some policies have to be very, very specific. They don't allow for a lot of latitude and or gray area for the officer to make a decision. So that becomes problematic. And so what Stan is talking about is exactly that. Now, where, you know, I now have this in live and living color, making this decision or making this contact or, you know, doing A, B, and C, rather than the policy saying you will do this for such minor infraction, you decide, no, I'm not going to enforce that particular section. And I'm trying to think of an example that would make it, put it into some type of context that most folks could understand. Like, we'll say, here's a good one. So you have a law enforcement policy that says when you make a traffic stop, if insurance cannot be provided to the officer at the time of the traffic stop, the vehicle will be towed, no matter what. It will be taken into custody. It'll be towed to the impound yard. Whoever's driving that car is going to be put on foot. Well, you've stopped a young mother with three children. Okay, so here becomes the issue. Do you use what we would call a term as common sense, as Joe says, is no longer really common, and write a citation and send these people on the way? Do you have them park the car in the parking lot and have them get a ride? Or do you tow the vehicle? Mm-hmm. If you do one of the other two, then in theory, you're in violation of the policy. So I hope that puts it into context for a lot of people. So now you have this on video, right? And as Stan would say, and probably in a lot of agencies across the country, there'll be supervisors that don't like that particular officer, and they're just looking and looking and looking. Mm-hmm. That's an organizational cultural issue that needs to be addressed, need to be fixed. So that becomes problematic for the officer. And in a lot of instances in law enforcement, officers aren't worried about their biggest concerns are violating policy, because they're held accountable more for that than almost anything else they do in a lot of agencies. So, you know, as administrators, we need to style general orders and put them in place to allow for common sense thinking, for practical knowledge, for finding solutions to problems, right, that may not necessarily always be an arrest or a citation, right? So it has become an issue. I think a lot of that is starting to go away, And part of that reasoning is what I was thinking when you're saying that, Stan, is, man, you know, I'm thinking of myself and my own organization. Well, what if we had a supervisor that was doing that? Well, we have checks and balances in place within our policies, and we're not the only one because we actually stole this policy from another agency. But there's only certain checks that are done on the videos, and it's not a daily look into it unless there's an incident that occurred that really needs to be reviewed, particularly any use of force or anything like that. That's going to be reviewed. But there are checks in place on a monthly basis that are at random for officers where we'll review the 8 hours of body camera video and or in-car camera video just for the check and balance to make sure that they're operating the way that they should be. So, yes, it ensures the officers doing what they're supposed to do by law, right, and that they're handling their business accordingly, barring a use of force incident or a contentious call for service or something along those lines. But also ensures that the product that we're putting out, which is public service, is what it's supposed to be. And we don't have anybody that's racially profiling, or that we don't have anybody that's going beyond the scope of their duties. So, you know, administrators are the ones that need to handle that, need to fix that. But what you're saying is 100% true. Yeah. Officers get apprehensive. Now, for me, it's a little different. I've been on camera since 1994. I mean, the agency that I worked for prior to coming here had in-car cameras the day I started. So every contact has been there. And was, you know, so as a young officer, was I apprehensive? Yeah, a little bit, because I didn't really know much about the technology. But I'll tell you that it saved me more than it has ever harmed me. People come in and follow those complaints, and they're like, well, let's watch the video. Where did the officer say that?
But my other side of it is, and I'm going to go to police administrators right now, and I know, just like I can't speak for all officers, you can't speak for all chiefs and administrators, and I understand that. But this is one of the other silent killers that the officer suffered from. One of the biggest pain in the ass offenses for us to deal with, I think officers across this country will silently tell you, I'm right. Not on the camera, but they'll tell you I'm right, is these misdemeanor bullshit marijuana possessions. That is aggravating to us. It is time-consuming. I'm on camera now. I can't. We have a law that says I have to put you in jail. Stan cannot cut you a break now. I am on video. Okay? You have to search the car. You got to do an impound. You're out there for 2 hours. I'm talking minimum, the fastest you can do it. 2 hours from start to stop to 10-8 report, with the report still yet to be dictated because you hadn't gotten to it yet. And for the officers that have to type their reports, I feel sorry for you. And so you got to sit out there. You make the stop. You see this little bit of weed. I'm talking about, and we have some officers that were such assholes, they're looking to shake on the floor, trying to build a weed case, be that as it may. You spend an hour out there on the scene, getting the suspect in custody, having another unit transported until you can get there, doing the inventory, processing the scene, collecting evidence, calling out crime scene. You do all of that out there. You would think it's a murder. Then you leave from the scene. You go all the way to the county jail. You have to do a warrantless arrest affidavit for every charge, no matter if some of them thought up some other stuff because I need another tick mark. You know, you do all that. Then you leave the jail 45 minutes later. So we're at an hour 45. Now you go all the way to the police department or to a phone to dictate your report, which is going to take another 20, 30 minutes. And finally, 2.5, 3 hours later, you're 10-8, no report, and out of my 10-hour shift, in 3 hours, guess what? That SOB that had a joint, I got it. I got a drug arrest. Claire, I see you nodding. Come on. And then Billy, please come in.
Yeah, but this much, too. That's going to go rot in a house. But what's the point? And I don't know. I have a lot to say about that because I find that to be pretty ridiculous and a huge waste of time for officers, because there's a lot more people you could be helping than making an arrest on somebody with a joint. Who the hell cares? Just move on, you know? I mean, 2 hours is a whole lot of 2 hours is a whole lot of time that an officer could be spending doing a whole lot more better shit than taking this much weed to a garage.
Yeah.
So, Billy, what do you have to say about that?
I was just going to add that, you know, a lot of things turn on what your county's district attorney's policy is on arrest.
Mm-hmm.
In every, you know, there's 254 counties in Texas, and they're all pretty different. You know, I live here in Dallas County, and I know what our DA's policy is on punishing or even bringing charges against certain types of possession charges or marijuana, for example. Whereas some counties, they're very, you know, they're overzealous in getting anything on the books and getting going after something. And because ultimately, you know, until we change our state law, it still is illegal. But how it's going to get processed. And then you start looking at, we talk about community policing. Well, you're going after things that, you know, that really at the end of the day, it's not as big of a deal unless it's some kind of distribution or something much bigger than a little bitty joint. Is that going to really save the day? Because you can, a police officer can walk into any club, just drive down the street. You're going to smell it somewhere. Somebody's going to have it in their car. It's going to be in a club, at a concert, you name it. So then you ask yourself, what's your intent? What are you trying to do as far as saving and protecting the community? Is that protecting the community? Well, if somebody's under the influence of it, yeah, that's a different story. If they're under the influence of anything, even a prescription drug that they didn't get refilled or something like that and it's no longer valid, that's a violation. So those are different. But wasting an officer's time and going after little things like that when, yes, there's things that, we, you know, we can have our officers on the beat doing things to prevent crimes from happening or deterring crimes from happening. You can't necessarily prevent stuff, but you can have that show of force to deter a crime from happening. But taking, and Stan just came up with hours away from being on the street because of all the things that are required by his procedures and by law and by that chain of custody to make sure things are going to be valid if that DA decides to prefer charges on this particular case. So you have a, you know, you got to figure out what the role of the policing is in your community. And if it's something that we're going after everything, then you're gonna have some budget shortfalls. You're going to eventually end up losing police officers because they're not going to have the money to go after all these things and still pay, you know, our officers on the street, which, I, you know, they deserve the money they get because they have a very difficult job. And I know, you know, and I'm usually on the other end, you know, going against the police, but I do think they have a very serious job that not a lot of people sign up for.
You know, Billy, you said something interesting. And you know, this is what I wish I could get the realm of policing from my experience to people I was around to understand. We are in a policing culture that is very statistically driven. The chief needs, not this chief here, but most chiefs in big departments, they need arrest stats to impress the city council to keep their six-figure job. That's the fact. The mayor wants all the arrest records to say I'm tough on crime. Fact of the matter is, policing and the criminal justice system is the last institution in America that has not done a forensic study that says, how do we as an institution do more with less, tired of going to roll call and hearing about what's cut and being told to do more with less? See, that's the bullshit right there. And we like to go into our black-white camps where we're comfortable and we think we're an expert. We love to go into our Republican-Democrat camp because all the people around me are the expert, and that's bullshit because when you walk out on the streets, I don't give a damn what goes through any courtroom in America. It started with some officer
somewhere in some dark-ass alleyway or some emergency room with a three-year-old with their fucking head cut off, pardon the F-bomb, because right now I'm talking about what we see. And when we talk about criminal justice, it really amazes me that when we talk about victims, and this is for all of you that thought this is the hate police show, that's bullshit. This is the fact show. You got men and women out there, I don't give a damn if they've been there 3 years, 5, 20, 35, or 40. They're walking around with stuff in their head, not to minimize our veterans. But what can be more egregious than constantly going to Americans, doing harm to Americans in America for not a one-year tour or two-year tour, and it's not to minimize their service, but for 25 years, 35 years, 40 years. America is not serious about fixing our problems because people are worried about hurting black folks' feelings, white folks' feelings, Christians' feelings, Republicans' feelings, Democrats' feelings. Guess what? When you go in that box in the ground, there are no feelings. The number one killer of police officers in this country today is not people. It's suicide. And I almost dropped the cardinal sin and used the Lord's name in vain. But I'm going to tell you, I get so fed up with all these politicians and all these chiefs and all these police unions and all these Republicans and Democrats. We all agree we love our troops. We love our cops. But none of you talk about police suicide. None of you. Oh, we'll fold a flag and we'll hit the bagpipes. And I know I'm going off on a tangent. But I get frustrated doing this show sometimes. Because there's so many officers who I used to work with that say he's anti-police. I put more time into police suicide and police health and safety than some of the people who got the badge on in the car right now trolling this show across this country. Because you are... Go ahead, Chief.
I was just going to say, I mean, you're 100% spot on. I mean, there is nobody... really helping with that particular topic of police suicide.
Yeah.
I've already learned that that's eternal. That's something that, as an agency, I've got to come up with. But another point I want to bring up is, and kind of goes off the topic of where we were going, but what Billy said about, you know, your community driving what they feel is important, right? How you police. You know, what is important now? What needs to be taken care of? And, you know, he talked about the transportation and or distribution of, you know, that's a serious offense that needs to be dealt with. You know, I'll say back, you know, back in my younger policing days, my community, because there was, and I'm talking in the 90s, you know, in early 2000s, there was marijuana everywhere. And I was in Dallas County. And back then, if you had a seed in your carpet, that was possession under two. We could prosecute you for that. But what was important in the community was that little bit of marijuana, what we talked about earlier, we kind of used it as something over somebody's head. That little dime bag you had in your pocket, hey, you know, kind of like the Godfather. Hey, I'm going to do a favor for you today, so I may come calling later on if you do a favor for me. Because we had serious part one crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Part one crimes are rape, robbery, murder, you know, aggravated robbery. I mean, we had these things actively happening at that point in time. It didn't have time to mess with you for your dime bag of dope. But I knew you were out there in the community and maybe an identified gang member. You may be living in that particular neighborhood where a lot of this stuff is taking place. So I may come calling one day and say, hey, you remember how I cut you that break?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now you're going to help me out. And it's just between us. If you can just give me a street name, that's fine with me. That's where we need to start. Right. So what is the expectation of the community? How do they want you to police? You know, and I think the majority of people, there's a segment that are just marijuana's the devil, that's fine. But I think the large segment of the country would rather not have people killed than us putting people in jail for marijuana. I think that's a pretty even common sense approach to this. So what he said was very important. It was a little small segment, but what does that community want you to do? For the police suicides, I'm with you, Stan. As you were talking, my internal swear jar was filling up because you're 100% spot on about that particular issue. Nobody is dealing with that but us, right? No politician is coming down giving me money to run a mental health program. You know, I mean, mental health is broken.
But I'm going to say something right now, and I'm going to let you finish. And God put it on me to say it, and I'm going to say it. I hate this time of year. I go through all the motions, and I put up the Christmas lights because it's what my wife likes doing. And I'm not feeling it. But I'm going to go do it. And I've been retired 2.5 years. But I got 25 years of nightmares. I worked on Christmas and Christmas Eve. It was a work day for me. And I wasn't going to work to sell you the perfect Christmas present for your kids. I'm going to go deal with some shit y'all want to read about from the comfort of your living room the next day. And I'm not there to where I am. Merry Christmas. I'm not a cop. I may never get there. Because I'm 59. I spent 25 years of my life as a cop. I don't know today at 59 who Stan is. I know what Stan's beliefs are, his values are, his morals and his principles. But I know what Stan did for 25 years. All that being said, I don't like this season because I'm going to watch the police suicides go up for the next month and a half. Not because they're under investigation, not because they beat their wife, because we're in seasons, greetings, love and peace to everybody, and they're dealing with America's psychotic bullshit every day. And they can't, too many judges don't give a shit. Too many city council people don't give a shit. Too many mayors and governors don't give a shit. And you concerned citizens who love our cops because blue lives matter, you don't give a shit either. Not everybody, but I'm going to say it. And Chief, you don't have to comment to it. Because if all these people gave a shit, why do our suicide statistics go up between Christmas and New Year's? We put more cops in the ground Christmas through New Year's from suicide than the rest of the year on citizens. All these unions aren't talking about it. I mean, go ahead, Chief.
It's the dirty little secret of the profession. That's what it is. I mean, it's not talked about. Predominantly because we, outside of law enforcement circles, because we would hear about it all the time. It'd be on the news. It's an issue within an organizational, the cultural issue within the organization. It's that dirty secret that nobody wants to talk about. It's the stigma of mental health coming forward and saying, hey, I've got a problem. And then when you have the ability to do that, or you get to that point, then there's no avenue for you to go because a lot of places don't have anything in place for you,
mm-hmm.
right? So that becomes an issue throughout the profession in itself, because there's not a lot there. So, and then it's a, you know, multi-pronged approach. It's administration making sure that people are taken care of. So when these things are observed, that we get them the help that they need. It's us. It's absolutely 100% us. That's why it falls back on us.
And I don't want to call, and I don't want you, anything I say, you don't have to comment to, because I'm going to tell you, brother, I tell you all the time, I love you. You are a working chief of police who has the guts to come on the show every week. Other chiefs are not lighting up this show. They're trolling it, though. And some of them got multi-million-dollar budgets, and they're listening to you, and you're out there trying to run a police department. God bless your people that give, and y'all doing the best you can. You got duct tape, paper clips, and occasionally you'll borrow me, call me and ask to borrow the stapler. You know, that's the bullshit. But, you know, I am not going to give, and I know we're getting off topic, and I don't care. We're paying for it. We're going to go where the show goes. You know, these police unions, all power, and the most powerful unions in America today are not your iron workers, they're not your steel workers, that's bullshit. They're your police unions. That's who endorses these judges. Billy, I'm a lie. That's who gets these officials elected. Your police union. Why is it that officers are dying every day because there's no mental health for them on a federal basis? Every politician, including Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and anybody else who ran for office, the first union that they went to for support was the police union. So they can be the law and order president. That's fact. But you know what we did as Americans? We went to sleep. Why? Because we see policing from our little lens. As black people, white people, Hispanic people, rich people, that's how we do it. We don't see our safety beyond ourselves. When you get on an airplane, you could be the safest person in the world, but guess what? Billy, you flew. You ain't controlling jack. Floor is open. Any of you guys, I'm going to be quiet for a while. Y'all go ahead. Come on, John.
Yes. If I may, I want to bring it back to the marijuana, the joint thing that everyone spoke on. The problem I have with that, and it's going to sound like I was never in the streets, but being in the streets showed me a lot of different things. That joint that you didn't take from someone, if I was to do a shooting that day and you didn't take and arrest me, but you just let me go because it was a joint, you just gave me a defense. You just gave me a defense. I was under their influence. Oh, Officer Mason knows that he had stopped me earlier and he knew that I have marijuana. He smoked the marijuana. Oh, that's one thing I want to throw out there. Secondly, I know that all drugs affect everybody differently. I've seen kids out here, they're not just smoking marijuana, but they're lacing it. They're lacing it with base or crack, whatever you want to call it. They're lacing it with fentanyl. They're mixing it with dust, hash. So that marijuana joint that you may think that you can stop somebody for may have been something more serious. And I'm not saying this for you to go out and start arresting people. What I'm saying is when you're talking about using your discretion, it's dangerous. It's dangerous because now, say, like, in my hustling days, I know that dudes would give kids 9, 8 years old joints of weed because those kids used to look out for them. And the little kids used to think, like, oh, it's cool, man, let's go to the park, they're going to buy us beer and give us weed. But that same joint that you seen those two rolled up, that you didn't take from them or you didn't deal with properly, he may be going in the park to give that to a kid that's 8, 9 years old. Now, this kid has a marijuana habit. And that marijuana habit leads to a dope habit or a coke habit. So, you know, the danger in all of this is that we talk about selective anger among the black community, but we got to talk about selective policing, selective prosecution. It can't be selective. If it's going to be, if something's against the law, then you have to uphold the law. Because you don't know where that joint is
going to
end up.
Yeah, you're right, John. And what you're describing is 100% correct. But and I did get to it. But you either destroyed it or I took it. So it didn't go anywhere else. So either you dumped it, which may have been a violation of policy back in the day. I was never hemmed up for it. Or I took it, which meant I had to do a report. But
exactly.
That would be down the road.
And I'll take
you. Still owed me.
Steve,
but you still.
I kind of figured that you took it because you look high right now, Chief.
No.
But you know what, John?
It's all catalog, John. It's all catalog.
But the Chief brings in something that I want Billy to elaborate on while we got him, because we go, as long as we got Brother Billy up in the house, we're going to keep him here. This is what I think most officers struggle with. We have the person and we have our morals and our beliefs. You have, just in the example you gave, we have letter of the law says I take that weed and put John's ass in jail. To hell with everything. I don't give a damn if your kids are eating out of dumpster tomorrow, John. You shouldn't have did what you did. That's your problem. Then you have this thing called spirit of the law. We know what the law says. But what is the law designed to do? Correct behavior. Now, that goes back to chiefs and to city managers who give the chief power. How much discretion do you give that officer? What Stan does in a high drug, high crime, low income community may seem extreme when you apply it to the affluent, well-to-do community. See, one size doesn't fit all. We have these things called allergies. We don't give everybody the inoculation because some people are allergic to what you're giving. And when you trust your officers in the street and they build these bonds with the community called trust and transparency. And I know what John will and will not do. I don't care what you did over here. I go home every night because the biggest drug dealer and kingpin in my neighborhood lets me go home. It's not the gun, the best. It's not the backup. See, this is where when we want to talk about policing, we're on the show. Let's just get 100. You know, I got somebody on my Facebook timeline. Her dad, one of the biggest drug dealers in Waco. When I started, I lived right across the street from him. Didn't know it when I moved there. I could spot game. But you know what? My daughter was a baby. My son was just born. I'm in the academy. Every day when I came home from the police academy, he said, how was school? You're going to be a good officer. You're going to do good. He went to jail. He did his time. He did everything that the judge said you got to do. But you know what he did? He believed in me when I was in the academy. When family members were telling me why white folks in Waco wasn't going to hire me, and I'm already in the academy. When his house got raided, I stepped on my front porch as an academy student and watched his kids and his wife sitting on the curb with the media everywhere in the academy. I'm trying to make the team. And I said, no. I went over to one of the detectives. He was cool. I said, let them come in my house. They don't need to be out here sitting on the curb with all this. They can come in my house. You can bring an officer in, whatever. My little raggedy-ass house is 1911 North 6th Street. Why did I do that? Oh, they're just drug dealers, kids and wives. To hell with them. Bullshit. These people were my neighbors. What he did, he did. It's his job to sell drugs and make money. It's my job to catch him. But in between fulfilling the department's requirements to catch him and society's expectations of who is good and bad and right and wrong, there's the moral me. This is why we have conflict in police-community relations. At what point do you become the moral you? Not the pro-cop or pro-hood or black or white. At what point do you have the guts to stand up and say, I don't know why I did it. I can't tell you why. Well, you could have been kicked out of the academy. All that could have been could have happened, but it didn't. And I am here now 30-some years later. I'm here today with whatever people may think of me. I did the right thing. That's where we're missing it. We're not doing what is right. We're doing what is right for everybody else. But our soul, our spirit, or our quiet place, or whatever the hell you want to call it. And all of us on this show have had that moment in life where whether it was our girlfriend, wife, husband, best friend, whatever, have said something and that hot needle goes up your back. And it just didn't sit right. You don't know why. Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, brother.
I just want to add, you bring up an excellent point. At the end of the day, we're all humans. No matter what career we go into, as long as we're still having humans in our police departments and in any government agency, you're going to get the human component that can never, we got to always remember that and be mindful of that, that we are people first. We have feelings. We have belief things that we've grown up. We have, just scenarios that we deal with in our daily walk in life. So we can't overlook that. We're not at a point to where we're using robots for policing. I mean, I know there's some agencies that do have some robots that can go in and do some things, granted, but those are exceptions and extensions to policing that are controlled by the human aspect. I know in Dallas we had a robot that went after someone that did a bad thing and killed some police officers, and they had a robot that went in there and took them out, but there was a human on the other end of that. That made that decision on to utilize it. So your experience is, yes, we have to be mindful whenever you start hearing politicians talk about the rule of law. And I know, Stan, you mentioned about Barack Obama, Biden, Donald Trump. The rule of law is more than just, going by the Constitution. It also means the discretion that police officers have, because at the end of the day, the average person on the street don't think about the Constitution each day unless some police action happens to make them now think about it. Now they're thinking about, oh, what should I have learned in civics class? What's the law saying on this? Well, our leaders are the ones that put these things together, whether state law or federal law. But at the end of the day, we all live under that rule of law. And we have to allow our leaders to make that decision. But guess what? We're the ones that vote for these people.
Amen. Amen.
We're the ones that put them in office. So if you're concerned that somebody's been overzealous with crime and targeting people, but yet you don't go out and vote, you can just STFU.
That's it.
Because things are going to happen whether you vote or not. Bad things are going to happen certainly if you don't vote and you don't have a choice. So if you know things are not what the people want, then do yourself the easiest way to team up against that is to go out and vote. Exercise your right. That should be the number one constitutional thing you deal with each day, because that's going to help you with not only the criminal aspect of it, but your life is more than just dealing with crime and policing. You got to deal with fair housing, jobs, minimum wage, equity, you name it. So it's a bigger deal. So that's why running for office for me is so important. I believe that I am a product of my community.
Absolutely.
I didn't just get the silver spoon handed to me.
Absolutely.
I joined the Air Force I took the test in 11th grade. I went to Waco High School. I remember going over to the little National Guard unit we have right there on New Road, took the test, and I had to wait a whole year in the delayed entry program because I knew what I was going to do. I knew I was going to serve my country, during the 90s, during the time of the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. I knew that was, for me, I wanted to do that. I wanted to do my part, as well as provide for myself later on. But these are the decisions, I decided that this is going to be right for me. So that's why what I tell you now, it's not because I'm just, I lived in the hood. I told Stan before, I lived in East Waco.
East Waco.
I grew up in Pecan Gardens, and then we moved over on Preston Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you in the 1,000 block of Preston Street.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you exactly what was going on in the 90s where I, I'm walking out of my house and helicopters are flying by.
Yes, sir.
The helicopter landings and arrests and people and roundups, whatever they called it. That was prevalent in my neighborhood in East Waco. So those are the things that I see every day. I have friends, John, that have been convicted. I have a friend that was executed for killing two drug dealers on 9th Street. Gerald Wayne Tigner.
Yes, sir.
Grew up with him.
And waiting for the police.
Yeah. So I can tell you right now, that, you know, the things that this is why I'm so passionate about our political leaders looking like the community. And in Dallas County, I'm going to tell you right now, and the position that I'm running for, and I hate to go back to me, but this is my little soapbox.
No, you're here, brother. Do you. Do you. Right now. Go ahead, bro.
We have had a Dallas County judge since 1866. Every single person, with the exception of one, has been a white male. Every single one. We had one white female not too long ago. Every single one has been a white male. None, no black has run. I'm the very first person of color to even run for this office. But our community is more, it's more than just white males in Dallas County. We have people like me that grew up in the hood, decided to serve our country, decided to go to law school and make a life for himself defending people that have been wrongly accused, or people that just need to have a fair shot at justice. So that's what I'm about. So I get off my soapbox and let Stan finish.
No, you're not going that far that quick. And right now, I don't really care about time constraints and this and that, because one of the things that I am, you know, I have a lot of faults, but loyalty is not one of them. And you're not here because you're black. I happen to know some black people. You're not here because you're a lawyer. I know a few of them. I got a badass one right now working on some stuff. You know why you're here? Because I know your story. You want to talk about Pecan Gardens and Thousand Block of Preston? Brother, you know I was there. And for me to see you, and I'm not going to call you a kid would be an insult, but to see where you came from, and I know it personally, because I put more people in your neighborhood in jail than I did say what's up. And if I did say it, it was on the way to jail. And you're a personal hero. You're, you know, to satisfy the grief that I talk about from the job, the things in your head, you search for success stories. I may not have a personal contact success story with Billy Clark, but I know what Billy Clark grew up in. I know where Billy Clark came from. It was ironic that we were both in the Air Force. So when you look at these are the things, that's why you're sitting here on this show. Nobody, I don't care who knew you, well, Billy did this, Billy did that. I know Billy from what is in the spirit. And to Dallas, what you got ain't working. I don't need to bring your stats up. You got a police department that's over 1,000 people short. 1,000. And if people say, well, he's advocating for Billy Clark, damn right I am. I'm trying to give you a solution. Your police department is 1,000 officers short. You can't hire anybody. Nobody wants to come up there and work. Why? For work, they're having the problems Dallas is having right across the highway. Plano ain't having the problems. Arlington's not having the problems. What you doing, Dallas County? Anyway, I'm going to get off that because we're at the, 11-minute mark. Let me grab these two callers before we go out. 312 area code 0932. Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, Stan. Thanks for letting me in.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah. First of all, everything that Billy said, I agree with. I mean, it's the reality. But let me just talk about the whole idea of discretion. This policing has to have some level of discretionary powers. Now, certainly, if you know he talks about the one item issue, certainly that can always happen. But that's like saying, what if I hit the lotto? What am I going to do with that? The fact that, as you said and alluded to, you're not the only one that has taken. I openly admit it, I violated department policy on many occasions because I was not going to lock up a kid for a joint. Even to this day, I don't advocate for that type of activity. Now, if you start, what I used to tell people is this all the time, you lock yourself up. I mean, if you're a smart mouth and you start mouthing off and you dirty, then you're supposed to go to jail. But as far as locking someone up and destroying someone's life for a joint, I'll take that. Now, if it's something else, then that's a whole different issue. But as far as discretion, police departments, that's the problem with them now. They have taken the power of discretion from the police department and have mandated certain things, which don't make sense to me. And I'm done.
Amen, brother. Appreciate it. For all y'all that don't know, that's Joe. Joe had to go to another event. He told me yesterday that he had another event to go to. But appreciate him keeping in touch and calling back in. Let's go 203 area code. I think that's Big Time Rome. What's going on, brother?
Hey, good afternoon, family. I just want to say, and this is just to piggyback on what you said earlier, Stan, about the cameras and the uniforms and the things that the officers are up against. I'm going to use your great word that I learned from you. We get caught up in the optics. We get caught up in what we see. And I call it like the modern-day photo shoot or press release Photoshop. What I mean by that is when we see these footage on a video camera, what we see is what we see. But we cannot possibly feel what that officer is feeling mentally and emotionally at that very moment in time. We get a videotape, we get the playback, and then we're looking at it from a physical standpoint of view, which is unfair to try to measure it from any other view if we're just looking at it physically, because what happens, because of the optics, we get caught up in the emotions of it. You follow? And so we're viewing it, and then we're putting in our own emotional feelings in what we see or what we think we see. Like you said, you don't hear what the officer is saying. There's a whole bunch of noise, so it doesn't serve the officer well. It's unfair to him. At the same time, like you said, with the uniform, you know, we love to, as they say, we like to dress up and look nice, but we don't like to address that which we don't like. So a lot of this stuff is just optics. It's just what we see. We don't understand because we're not in that officer's body. We don't know what he's going through emotionally at that particular time. We just see what we see, and then we base it historically on how our lives have been historically or how we've been affected maybe by our interaction with police or how we've maybe been tainted by watching a lot of things, by not knowing law, not understanding law. So we create this psychological profile of I would call the police officer is automatically a criminal by doing what he did, based on our feelings on our historical and, let's say, historical relationships with police. May it be good, bad, or indifferent. And then a lot of people like to jump on the bandwagon. So a lot of it is just visual, which is minimal of what the facts are, that are dressed up. Have to address the maximum, which is what got a lot of people messed up. And you hit on it many times when you talked about the suicide rate. It's the emotional and mental state of that officer or that human being or that soldier at the time when it all happened. It's easy for people to look at something after it happened and then make a so-called judge, become a judge, jury, and executioner to that officer's right. So I just want to put that out there, Stan. Hey, good man, to brother. Be back for a moment.
Well, I appreciate that, man. So we're down to 6 minutes. So I definitely want to get to our guest. Because I'm going to tell people that he's biased. He's, yeah, hell yeah. When it comes to Billy Clark, I am. Because until somebody, his opponent can damn sure call the show, reach out to me, I'll bring him on. You know, we're equal opportunity over here. I call Billy because I know Billy's number. Now, to his opponent, you can get with Billy. Billy will give him my number. He can call me. I will bring him on. In fact, I'll say this. And Billy didn't know I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it because I pay for everything I do, so I don't care. I ain't got it like that, but I got it. So I'm going to flag it for a minute. You know what? If your opponent, Billy, wants to debate you, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You coordinate with him. You give me the date and the time. You can give him my email. He can send me any pictures he wants in the intro. I will do a town hall or whatever you want to call it. Ain't going to be nobody on the Zoom but you and him, and I'll moderate. Or he can get a moderator that I'll bring in and say, welcome to Behind the Blue Curtains, whatever, whatever. I'm sitting back, so-and-so's the moderator. I will let them run it, and I am willing to field the calls on the show. I'll bring them in, and I'm damn sure going to ask some questions myself. But you can let him know. You can give him a worldwide platform where he can come on and y'all go at it. I'm not going to co-sign either one of you because I'm already in your camp. I'm not going to be biased, and I'll be, you know, cordial. But I'm willing to do that. That's a tool open to you because that's how much I believe in what you want.
I would absolutely love that, and I will definitely extend that to him if he's willing to do that. I think this is how we get the community and the citizens to know where we stand on certain issues and what our mindset is and going forward and how we will serve the community. If we don't ask these difficult, tough questions, you know, we'll never know. And for me personally, I don't know. I think I love hard questions. I just absolutely love them.
Amen.
And I, you know, I guess that's coming from the military. As a military officer and a former commander, you know, I get asked some very serious, tough questions about policy and about, you know, I was asked about law of armed conflict and, you know, how are we, who are we attacking today? We attack this one country today, but tomorrow we can't. So how are we going to restrain ourselves and not go out overzealously doing these things that just yesterday was a lawful combatant, today they're not. These are the things, that, the situations that I'm familiar with, and I absolutely, you know, I will love it. I can talk all day about a topic, any topic.
Well,
letter
brother,
A,
you,
letter
you
B.
Put it out, put it out to him, you know, and he's the guest here. Tell him I ain't got nothing against him. Send him the chief's picture. Tell him the chief is staying. Don't send my picture because I'll scare the hell out of him.
I'm sure he's, never mind, I'll keep that myself.
No,
I'm sure
he's listening.
Right,
oh, I know.
I'm sure they're already seeing this.
Oh, yeah, there have been people that have been listening to this for the last 6 years, but especially with my affinity towards you and my support and belief for you, I'm quite sure they are. They're foolish if they're not. But I appreciate you being here. We're at the, 1 minute mark. Y'all are going to hear the blog talk, but we're going to go ahead and end this show still right. But, Chief, final thoughts? What are you thinking?
Good topics of discussion. I mean, as always, I mean, we certainly got somewhere. You know, always great to have you guys on and discuss these type of items of, you know, law enforcement, police suicides, and, you know, the things where we need to make those changes in community policing. And so, I mean, I think we always bring up very valid topics, whether you like it or you don't. There's always something there to choose from. You know, it's always – everybody's got that toolbox, you know, you take those, put those tools in there, you think you need in your toolbox. So always glad to got to spend my Saturday with you guys and, you know, hope you guys have a great weekend, Billy. Good to see you again. Good luck. And, you know, I'll watch the debate. I want to see it. I actually want to make that happen. So,
we're going to make Billy. That happen.
Billy's going to, first top's going to be the letter A. I want to hear him talk all hour and a half about the letter A.
You can go all day long, all day long.
Excellent.
Clam.
Going with Air Force. Air Force.
There you go. Aim high, baby. Clam.
Aim high.
Hey, man. That was a good show. I wanted to say to Big John, I think that was a good point that you made about the officer's discretion and the possibility on where that joint could go. It would be confiscated. It's just the problem is it takes so long to confiscate something that if it were just legalized, it would just, you wouldn't have to deal with it. So that was kind of where I was going with that. But it was a good show. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk about body cams or cameras footage much. So next week, hopefully, but I think it was a good show. If we went somewhere with it.
Yeah, we always go somewhere, but you know what? Wherever we're going, we're always ahead of those who don't want to go there.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, we tend to go to the places that aren't even on the map. So You know, but I got to go back to Billy to give his final remarks part of that. John closes out. Billy, I'm going to tell you, brother, keep your head up. I'm proud of you. And with personal moment, Air Force moment here, me and you. Did you see that sister? That's with the Thunderbirds. Did you see that on my page?
No, I missed that.
Brother, you got to go look at my page, Billy.
Sister
flying with the Thunderbirds, bro. And our motto is what? Aim high.
Mm-hmm.
That's hella high, man. You don't get no higher than that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I saw her and I thought about you because, I managed to meet a few guys, ladies when I was in that were aviators or whether they were flight engineers or pilots or co-pilots or whatever. And so I've always been amazed and I personally always marvel at because when I see you, I see me. I couldn't do it. And that's what gives that spiritual connection. You went where I couldn't go. But I don't say, well, why couldn't I do it? I'm happy you did. Because I don't have to be there to see someone who looks like me, who grew up going through what I went through, get there. Brother, that gave me, when I saw her picture, I thought of you. I was so honored by, first off, the United States Air Force that I served in. To open that door without anybody having to say open it. And then, she's NS-16 at whatever altitude she's at. But I got to go back to Billy Clark, who was in the AWACS. Then I got to go from Billy Clark to the Tuskegee Airmen. And it's easy to recognize them, but I got to also say there were some folks that were white that opened the door for them to be who they were. So America, we are better than our evening news media. We're better than some of our Facebook friends. We're better than our closet Facebook friends that none of us want to talk about. But don't be ashamed to stand up and say, Stan's black. America will judge Stan when I walk out the door here in Georgia every day. I'm going to be black before they even know my name. They know what I look like. Just like if I see the chief and I don't know him, he's a white guy. The way we're programmed to be in America, we're not programmed to meet people and understand people. So don't condemn me when I see people who look like me that I congratulate. I know about Tommy McGuire. I was at McGuire Air Force Base. I know his whole history in the P-38 Lightning. Not because I was forced to, but because when I was at McGuire and saw that P-38 Lightning that's sitting in the circle of McGuire Air Force Base, New Jersey, I went home and read about Tommy McGuire. And I was impressed by what this guy did to have his plane or a replica at the traffic circle on McGuire Air Force Base. And I'm equally as honored to know Billy Clark, who flew on an AWACS, who flew an AWACS. Y'all don't know what AWACS is, AWACS. Look it up, Google it, and see what he did. Don't you? Oh, he was a pilot. Billy wasn't flying you and your grandmother from one side of the country to the other. Go look at what he did and when he did it. In the game, people, if you get nothing else from Stan Mason in this show, if God takes me away tonight, I don't care if you're black, white, gay, straight, Hispanic, Japanese, I don't care. I respect people with skin in the game. And if those of you looking at this say, well, I don't know what he's talking about, look to down and to my left over there, which is my right, but actually y'all's left. There's a chief of police who comes on this show every week and gives insight and instruction and dialogue. And you know what? It's easy for – well, it's not easy for him to do. He does it. But he's got a wife behind him who's got to take heat every time he comes on this show. She may not even say it. But you know what I love? He's got a city behind him that doesn't have a problem with him being here. You want your city to be like something? Maybe you ought to reach out to him and ask him, How does your city feel about what you do? What does your city think? Maybe your city ought to be like his city. Happen to have the right mayor, the right city manager. They damn sure got the right chief. They got the right mentality in the neighborhood. We talk about, on this show every week, we talk about fixing your communities. And we're looking to New York and Chicago and Houston and Miami. Bullshit. They're not going to have the solution. Maybe we ought to be looking at Hewitt. Why is this chief of police on this bombastic, crazy-ass show, and he brings heat when the heat needs to be brought on anybody, and he brings facts when the facts need to be brought on anybody? And you know what? Because I got a wife. It's no day at the beach living with me. He's got a wife that's got to deal with, I'm sure, the naysayers after every show. She ain't going to come back and tell him all of it, because just like cops, we don't tell everybody everything. Needs to do our wives. But she ain't never tell him quit. That's 100. That is skin in the game. With that, I don't know where John went. John flexed off somewhere. On his chief, take us out, brother. You're the most fitting. Because I'm going to tell you, I can talk on my 25 years. I'm gone. But you're still there. So you get that seat of honor, brother.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate what you got to say. I mean, and that's what this is all about, is having that skin in the game. If you don't think you have it, you need to get your – I almost said it. You need to get yourself involved in it. But that's what this is about. And, you know, the one thing I'll say, I've said this many times, is it's going to take all of us to fix these problems, right? There are many of us who don't look like one another on this panel here, and that's what this is about. Now, I may not like having an uncomfortable conversation when we've had them, but I've been part of it, and you learn from it, and you move on, and you come to an agreeable term on how things are going to work. With that, I want everybody to have a good, safe weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Oh, John came back.
Well, John, you finally came back. We're glad you closed it and you left.
Yeah, I took offense to the chief, said we don't all look alike. I see he grew his beard in. I was just
getting ready to say that.
Hey, Stan, I want to close on a different note. I know the show is probably off the
Don't podcast, worry about it. Go ahead, bro.
But I need you, Billy, and Jim to pay close attention, because I'm going to come back to you in 1 second. Claire, can you unmute your mic for 1 second?
Real quick, John, we got about 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. All right, Claire. This is unscripted. You just arrested me. I'm riding in the backseat of your police car. Officer Van Wolf, why did you arrest me? I'm wearing red. I heard that the shooter had on black. Why did you just arrest me?
And that's based on what? I guess. I would just tell you why you've been arrested, but I'm not sure.
I want you to dialogue with me. Why did you just arrest me? It's not enough there.
I don't think that. Yeah, I mean, because if the shooter was you, then I wouldn't have you in the. If the shooter was somebody else, I would drive you back.
Please, car, Claire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking you a question. Why did you arrest me? I have one bag. I heard the shooter had on black.
But, John, I think what you're asking her, though, is something that people for this show, we're not going to do that because we understand that. I mean, I'm thinking.
There's more to it. Like, a shooter can put on a jacket or take off a jacket and still be the same shooter.
Time out. What I wanted to do, John. I wanted to do a quick exercise to show people how they talk to the police and give evidence, and I wanted you guys to come back and critique,
right.
But just not to with the conversation, but it kind of got mixed in the situation.
No, because we could have, you know what? Yeah, because we could have very easily said, you know, Stan, why are you arresting me when I'm 6'4", and the guy you're looking for is 5'11"? When you throw a color in with officers, and that's something you as a civilian don't know. When you give us a color, we key on colors. That's what we look for. We're driving 35, 40 miles an hour. When we're looking for a suspect, we're looking for a color, and then we focus from there. So that's kind of, it wasn't you. It's just the color. Nah.
Look, Ben.
Can't clean it up.
What happens is a person gives information.
We
to
know,
a
but we're too late in the show. Right, but we're too late right now. I get you. I know where you're going. We're going to do a show on that, but, I mean, Red, you know.
Somebody mentioned Chips earlier. There's an episode of Chips, not that this car was changing colors, but we can talk about that another day. It was pretty interesting, just being what Jaron was saying about colors.
But, John.
Change the color of a car, but.
Anyway, John, you get the honors. Take us out of here, bro.
Hey, man, listen, beautiful show, beautiful people. Have a beautiful weekend. The Chief doesn't grow a beard, and I don't care what he say, him and I look alike. I'm dark chocolate, and that's white chocolate. Peace and blessings.
Y'all are aggravated M&Ms.
I'm looking at Jim Devlin's name on there, but I'm seeing John. I don't know.
Exactly. Hey, Jim, whatever you do, don't commit no crimes because I don't want it to be a mistaken identity.
Right.
No, but,
I ain't going to worry about it.
What's going to happen tomorrow, John? You're going to get pulled over. They're going to say, we got a warrant for you. You're John Devlin. You know?
Basically twin.
Yeah. All right, well, look. We're going to get out. Everybody, appreciate everybody being here. Billy, brother, I know you make time, man, to be here. You know you're always here, man. All you got to do, because you're so busy. I never know when you're in Dallas, Austin, Houston, you moving around. I'm always going to send you a show link. And if you want to be there, you just show up. You're going to be regular. You're always going to get a show link. You show up if you can make it. If you can make it, you know, we always accept you because I know you sometimes you got 10 minutes, sometimes you have 3 hours. But you always give us what you got. And, brother, that's 100. I appreciate that. Make sure you coordinate that debate time.
I will.
And we can – they ain't got to do no advertising. If they want you, they can. I'll do up the picture. He can send the picture to me. You can give him my number. We'll do it. I don't want to speak to his assistant or whatever. I want to talk to him. If you want to do it, brother, look, okay, here's the date, here's the time, and I'll do it, and we'll have the rumble in the jungle, brother.
Let's do it. Hey, let's do it.
All right, I'll let you. Claire, appreciate you. How's Claire?
All good. We're all good.
Everything ready?
Oh, geez, man. Not ready yet, but we're getting there.
I know. Y'all doing the work on it. Well, you know, if I can be there, you know I'm going to be there.
All right, you're coming, man. I know you'll be there.
Yeah, I'm going to be like proud papa. I'm going to be like, this is my baby. Oh, my God. You know. But anyway, hey, I love you guys. Everybody be careful,
hey,
you know.
Stan, before we leave, I just wanted to say we did have an officer that was killed here in Mesquite. He died. So I just wanted to have a quick moment to reflect on his life and what he meant to his family, first of all, and then to the community. So very sad situation that Mesquite police are dealing with right now. So keep that officer in your prayers and his family.
And, you know, and like we alluded to earlier, you know, and I know the show can be a lot of things to a lot of people, but there's a lot of men and women that are just getting up going to work, emotions and feelings, but they're just trying to survive. I just want to go home. And some of them, I understand. They feel like the community hates me. I can't trust my department because in many instances, the department or the city has put me in a position for the community to hate me. And they feel alone. They're not going to say that. They can't. They work for these cities. I don't work for a city. I can tell you. Most of the negative impact that you see on officers is not so much what the officers did, it's what the officers do. That goes back to your city and your city management before it gets to the chief. So, you know, put your anger where it needs to be, and then don't make your anger physical. Make it a motivator. Do some action. Vote people out that don't need to be there, whether they're, you know, mayors, governors, chairs. She's unelected. Chairs aren't. So to each his reach, if I don't cop, it's not mine to have. It's not Stan. That's George Clinton. You know, big time. So we're going to get out. Everybody love you guys. Everybody be safe. And we're out.
Good weekend, guys.
Bye. Peace.